Thursday, September 22nd, the Asian Pacific Islander American Public Affairs Association, APAPA, co-hosted a town hall forum featuring California Assembly District 10 candidate, Elk Grove City Council member, Stephanie Nguyen. The town hall was held at APAPA's Sacramento office. On this edition of Elk Grove News Podcast, we have a recording of the forum which featured Nguyen answering a series of questions. On Wednesday, September 21st, APAPA held a separate forum featuring the other 10th district candidate, Sacramento City Council member Eric Guerra. Unfortunately, we were unable to attend that forum, and APAPA did not broadcast the forum via Zoom as originally planned. Our apologies to the Guerra campaign. Portions of this recording are not optimal, but almost all of Nguyen's answers are audible.
So I think the main introduction is no other than our council member, Stephanie Nguyen.
Yeah. Woo!
Yeah. And some background as she comes on stage again. This town hall is for the California State Assembly District 10, which covers Sacramento County, representing portions of Elk Grove, South Sacramento, and the city of Sacramento. I know we have actually limited time in the sense that we have a lot of different questions and topics. We're going to be covering 8 topics and questions that were actually covered yesterday that were with the help of our community partners. And so with that, again, another round of applause for Stephanie Nguyen. Yeah. I think we are going to begin with opening remarks.
Great. I get 5 minutes or 50 minutes. I want to thank APAPA for hosting this and all of the organizations that are here hosting this as well, too. These community forums really give us an opportunity to address some of the issues that are happening in our community, but also gives you an opportunity to hear from each one of us individually as well, too. I've worked with many of you for years. Right. I've been in the community for over 20 years now. Many of the organizations that were mentioned, I grew up with, and that you watched as I worked in the community and just starting out at Loaves and Fishes, feeding the homeless, to then running for the first time ever my sister's house fun run, to then joining OCA and Capital and being a part of my life. And so for me, this is more than just running for office. My parents came here during the fall of Saigon as refugees with absolutely nothing. And they made it. They made it in the sense of they needed to escape and find a better life for their family. We grew up on every single public assistance program you can think of. English is a second language for me. My family struggled. But I'm really fortunate now today to be able to run an organization that serves families exactly like my family, serves immigrants, refugees, undocumented, low-income communities. Every single day, my team and I wake up. We find ways to ensure these communities have access to resources and service so that they can become self-sufficient. I love the work that I do. I love it more than anything. I wake up every morning proud of the work that I do.
Yeah.
And when I finally became a council member of the city of Elk Grove, I was the first Asian American woman to hold the seat as a council member of the city of Elk Grove. It was a proud moment for me because my daughter was able to see something that who knew if she was ever going to be able to see that ever. But it also made me understand and see how local politics plays a role in our everyday life. Decisions that are made in local politics affects all of us. Being a nonprofit director that has an office in the city of Citrus Heights and in the city of Sacramento, the decisions that are made at the local level impact the work that I do every day and how I can serve the community. So I took that experience, and at the city of Elk Grove, I learned that not every single city is the same. Not every single decision needs to be made the same way because every city is different. And while I may work in a in the city of Sacramento. Family still reside in South Sacramento in the Little Saigon district where I grew up. I also get to see what it's like living in the city of Elk Grove and what that community is like. And I know that the decisions that I make as a council member truly impact the families and the communities that are in that city. I'm running for state office because it's time we take this to the state level. It's time that these decisions that are made and folks understand that the decisions that are made at the state level truly impact all of us. I'm probably one of the only candidates, maybe even the only legislator, that can say that I've done the work. We did COVID vaccines today at my office. 67 folks got vaccines. The nurses were flourished and thought, how amazing that you did that many. Yesterday, we did COVID testing. Over 800 people came and got COVID tested. Tomorrow, I'm up at 6 o'clock in the morning because we're doing a food distribution, a culturally appropriate food distribution for our communities who can't eat the food that your local food bank provides, fresh fruits and veggies. And I can tell you this, they are there religiously every single Friday, waiting at 5:30 in the morning for us to open up so they can get their share for the week. Those are the reasons why I want to run for state office, because I've done the work. I've seen how these programs impact them. I've seen how certain programs don't necessarily help. I'll give you an example, CalFresh. We enroll folks into CalFresh, which is formerly food stamps. And we don't get to dictate how much they receive. We don't get to dictate who qualifies. But I can tell you, I've helped folks with their applications, only for them to come back and say they only got $6 for the month. My time is up, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Jump right in. And as many of you know, the Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell yesterday, the central bank raised interest rates another 75 basis points. So our topic is inflation. And as we know, it's increased 67%, coinciding with housing affordability crisis that's worsened in the past 3 years. Inflation is at a 40-year high. From milks to eggs, the price of food has significantly increased. A Wall Street Journal story documented that for a family of four, they would spend $800 on groceries for a month. But with inflation, the number nearly doubles to $1,400. Many of the communities here in Sacramento may live on the edge. What is your plan to provide relief and to address inflation?
I'm so glad I ended with CalFresh because that's exactly what I was talking about, is that there are folks that don't qualify for CalFresh because they're on the cusp, right? We've created programs where you have to fall beneath almost to homelessness before the assistance kick in. And when the assistance kicks in, it's not even enough for you to survive. And those stories about families who only get $6 a month for CalFresh, those are real. Right? Who's going to be able to live off of $6 a month off of groceries? And so I think we need to invest more into programs like CalFresh. Programs where we can assist families to be able to afford groceries so that they can feed their families. Programs in which things like California and Cal EITC, right? Earned income tax credit. Those that work and have money, but just not enough. We give them incentives so that they get more money back, so that they can pay for things where they're able to make a living and live a comfortable life. I think we need to invest in more of those programs for these working families that aren't able to make it. Many of the programs that I work with right now, county, city, many of them, I have families that come in and they don't qualify, and I'm looking at them thinking, you absolutely should qualify. But because they're at that cost, right? Where it's like, wow, you make just $5 more, so you don't qualify. So you know what we gotta go back and tell them? We have to tell them, don't pay your mortgage for 2 months, and then you're gonna qualify for this financial assistance. But what happens when they don't pay their mortgage for 2 months? Bad credit, they can get evicted,
right? All of that happens, but those stories are real. That's exactly how we have the systems set up, to not help those that actually really need it so they don't fall behind.
Thank you. The second question is important to many of us, especially the AAPI community. And we're going to be talking about small businesses. Small businesses are the backbone of America and California's economy. And for many of us, we are small business owners, or we know someone who is a small business owner. But recently, the legislature may have made it more challenging for folks to either open businesses or keep their businesses open, and especially during the pandemic. It's been estimated now over 20,000 businesses, small businesses, have shuttered, forcing them to close their doors permanently. As an assembly member, what kind of assistance or programs or plans could you offer to support our small businesses?
So I mentioned earlier that I'm an executive director of a nonprofit organization, and I can tell you this. Running a nonprofit organization is like running a business. The only difference is that you give me a contribution, I give you a tax write-off. But all of the labor laws, all of the red tape, all of the things that you can get sued for as a non or as a small business owner is exactly what I get sued for. I've got 3 lawsuits sitting on my desk right now just because people can sue. There's just way too many red tape. There are way too many things that make it really difficult for us to be able to run a business. And I think the state absolutely needs to do more. Running a small business and taking a look at what happened to the pandemic, especially our minority-owned businesses, before the pandemic even happened, before everybody closed their doors, folks were already saying, don't go into Asian restaurants, don't go into Asian stores. How about the salons? My mom was a manicurist. She shut down her business because of it, right? Because COVID started from a manicurist. And so if you take a look at those incidents that happened, we as Asian Americans felt it before everybody else did. I think we absolutely need to do more. I think we need to take a look at local, state, regional tax credits for those businesses that are ran by minorities or so people of color.
Thank you. The next topic we're going to cover, homelessness. Sacramento's homelessness population has spiked 67% to nearly 9,300 folks who are homeless since 2019. Yet over the past few years, the state has allocated over $18 million to combat homelessness, yet the number continues to rise. Homelessness is a big concern for many of us in Sacramento. What is your plan? What's your proposal to address homelessness?
You're right. There's been lots and lots of money that has gone towards homelessness. And if anybody can figure it out, I think you'd be billionaires, right? And I think the fact that we all need to come together, we all see that as an issue. We all know it's an issue, and we all want to try to figure it out. I'm proud to say that the city of Elk Grove has the lowest amount of homelessness in the entire county. And that is because we respond to the issues. I worked with Assembly Member Jen Cooper in bringing $5 million to address homelessness early on. And that was so that we would have a crisis team there, a navigation team there. In addition to that, it was $4 million to the Elk Grove Food Bank to ensure that we have those in place for those that were homeless were able to access the food that they need. One of the ordinance bands, I'd say, that I led, right? I was one of those that served on the homelessness task force with the Councilmember Pat Hume. And I led that ordinance to ban encampments that were not clean. And now we have it 4 or more persons in an encampment is not allowed. And that is because we want to make sure that it's not all in one area. We want to make sure that they keep it clean as well, too. And we incentivize them, as a matter of fact, that if they clean up their areas and they pick up trash, that they give grocery gift cards. I think programs like that work. As somebody who does service providing for low-income families, as somebody who does service providing for all communities, I understand how important it is that we need to ensure that these services are available for them so that they don't stay homeless, so that they do have access to resources and services so they can get out of the situation in which they're in. I do that every day. I don't just take votes and sit back.
I do this work every day. That's the difference.
Thank you. So moving to our next subject, and this is a subject that is an important one for APAPA and for many API organizations, and that is anti-Asian hate crimes. And I was knowing that we are right on time, I was going to take a quick point of personal privilege to share. APAPA, since anti-Asian hate, played a big role in organizing unity against hate, hosting rallies in over 20 rallies across the nation. At the same time, we launched our centralized internship program, where we had over 250 interns helping reach out to elected officials to pass local resolutions to condemn anti-Asian hate. And we do have some of our interns here on the front row. Thank you, Regina Jacob, for joining us. And in addition, we have this internship program reached out to not only 200 elected officials, but this year alone had APS students in over 100 elected official offices.
Yep.
With that being said, with that, this is a very serious issue. NBC reported that there was an increase on crimes against Asians by 339%. There has been resolutions passed already by the California legislation, but what else can be done to prevent hate attacks against not only the APAPA communities, but all communities?
And I appreciate Papa taking the lead here, because, you know, as you all know, and if you don't already know, as an Asian American, we've experienced it our entire life. We just never really knew what it was, right? We always were told to turn the other way, walk the other way, just ignore it, just don't cause any issues, don't cause any troubles. But it's more than the 300% that you talked about. And I know that because I work with immigrants, and they come to me and they tell me every single day what they're experiencing. As a matter of fact, there was a woman who was able to escape, but she was almost raped, right? She opened up the door for a gentleman, she works, I don't want to go into details, but you know what? She was able to get away, and then when she reported it, she found out five other women were targeted for her. But none of those five women reported it. Had they reported it, she would not have been in the situation that she's in right now. And that's the one thing that we need to do a better job at, is reporting these incidents. In just my organization alone, we just did a really big dinner a couple weeks ago where we raised money so that way we can help victims of these hate crimes. Victims that have been targeted. Your home was targeted. Your car was vandalized. And you can't pay for it because the insurance doesn't pay for that. Well, the funds that we raise will help these individuals pay for those costs, because where is that money going to come from, right? And so one of the things that Assemblymember Jim Cooper did was he tried to pass this legislation where he considered hate crime, right, the sentencings in which they don't get early release, put on Proposition 47 and 57. And yet it didn't pass. And as a legislator, I will bring that back. Because a hate crime is a hate crime, and we shouldn't go easy on them or hurting someone. It is unfair that an individual who commits a hate crime is out before the victim is out and still laying in the hospital. And that is real. That is real.
Thank you so much. So another really quick point of privilege, I do want to say that we are, APAPA is so grateful, especially last year, for all of the community partners that rallied with us with Unity Against Hate, and that includes the NAACP and many, many community partners, and we just want to say thank you to them, staying in solidarity. Our next question is very similar to the topic we covered a little bit. We're going to cover public safety and crime. As you indicated, crime has been on the rise, generally speaking, the past few years, especially during the pandemic. What are your plans or legislation that you plan on proposing to address and to combat the rise of crime?
You know, I think 47 and 57 led to the rise in crimes, right? Now anything $950 or less isn't considered a serious crime. And we're doing some early releases now of those that are in prison. And I think we need to go back and take a look at some of that. You take a look at what happened in the news of the lady that was brutally raped and killed and set on fire, right? That was an early release case. But we're doing these over and over again. If you don't already know, I'm married to a police officer. And so safety is definitely a big key for me right now. We're losing officers left and right to other states. Left and right. Mm-hmm. If I'm calling 911, I don't want to see a Sunny Chung come to my door. I mean, I like Sunny Chung, but a Canadian murderer responding to my door, I want to see somebody with a gun, a badge, a uniform, right? It's an emergency. I'm calling 911 because it's an emergency. And that may be biased because I'm married to a police officer, but for me, I'm looking for somebody who can keep me safe, right? So I would take a look at Prop 4757 and try to see what we can do to make it better. I have a really good relationship with Assemblymember Jim Cooper, who's endorsed me for his seat. I want to make sure that we work with our sheriff-elect to bring forth ideas and plans that will work for our communities.
Thank you very much. This next subject is also an important subject for APAPA and many API communities, and it is the subject of working across the aisle, bipartisanship. As we know, we are at a state of tremendous gridlock on a federal level. Noting that today there was huge success in a climate bill getting passed bipartisan-wise, but generally speaking, that has been an issue. And one thing we know about the AAPI communities, there are folks on both sides of the party, and there are elected officials we work with on both sides of the party. And so a couple questions here, actually. I think it's a two-point question. But the first part is, are there any bills that you would propose where you would work with someone across the aisle?
Bills that I would propose to work with. I mean, I think all bills we should be working across the aisles. We shouldn't just be picking and choosing certain bills. I absolutely believe that it's time that we stop dividing and one stays on one side and the other stays on the other side. If we want to make this work, I brought my kids here, right? If we want to make this work for our children, we need to be able to cross the aisle. It's unfortunate, though, that we live in this world where we can't be friends with Republicans or Democrats, right? It's unfortunate in this world that we have to draw this line, and yet we teach our kids to all come together to figure this out. We teach our kids to work together, and we as adults aren't doing that right now. I've worked with Republicans, and you know what? There was mellows going on there that said I was a bad person, right? And how is that supposed to be okay for kids to see that when we're pushing them to work together? I think we should be working on bills, all bills should be something that we should be working with each other so that we pass good bills for the sake of our state, for the sake of our future, for the sake of our kids.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. So, I started with the first part and ended with that one because that was a great ending. The first part of the question is for us to get a sense of your political ideology, because we know it's not just being left or right, there is variations of that. How would you describe where you land in this political spectrum?
I would say that this is a great example. I have the endorsement of Assemblymember Jim Cooper, Assemblymember Kevin McCarty, and Senator Dr. Pan, the three legislators that oversee the district that have never gotten along and can't agree on anything at all, ever. Go back a month, I promise you that. I've never been agreed. For the first time ever, they've agreed and they've endorsed me and said, I am the right person for this seat. And they all have different visions and views on everything. But it's because of the work that they've seen I've done in the community. It's because of the work that I do every single day. It is because of the history that I've had with every single one of them that they believe that I can pull everybody together just like I pulled them together to agree on one thing before they leave office. And so if I'm the type of person, I'd say that I'm willing to work with everybody just so that we can figure things out.
Thank you. Thank you. Next, we are going to, our last two questions are going to be focused on the topic of climate change, climate action. And so the first one I'm going to read directly, and it is about keeping the lights on in California during a heat wave. In 2003, then Governor Gray Davis was recalled as voters were extremely unhappy and blamed him for the California energy crisis. Although you're not running for the position of governor, what do you think needs to be done to keep the lights on in California?
You know, luckily, the legislature passed to keep the Diablo Canyon power plant going, because if we didn't, we have rolling blackouts. That power plant supplies nearly 15% of the energy and the power here in the state of California. And until we can get a solid grid that can hold renewable and non-renewable energy, I think we need to continue to have that power plant up and running so that we can continue to be able to make up for these heat waves that happened, like we just saw the last couple of weeks, where we hit triple digits for a long period of time, and people's AC went out. Like Miss Betty Williams here put it on all over Facebook, you know, her AC went out. And so imagine if we had rolling blackouts where there were folks that were not able to turn on their AC. And I'm thinking of even the seniors. Right? The seniors in our community, if we have rolling blackouts and we have to shut the power off for them. So, you know, I think we need to continue to find a way in which we can have a solid grid to be able to hold it, so that way we can sustain when we have some of these heat waves.
Thank you very much. Actually, I'd like to drill down a little bit about that, because a lot of California's energy infrastructure is somewhat outdated. Any proposals or ideas on what we can do to improve our climate infrastructure to be more resilient?
I mean, I think that's where we work with the experts on that, because I'm not an expert in that, right? I think that's where we bring in folks that do this work and find ways in which we can ensure that we can make it work for how the sun goes down, we only have solar, folks. In Alaska, the sun is enough all day long, right? And so we have to figure out a way in which we can capture as much as we can.
Thank you very much.
I'm not an engineer, so. I'm not the engineer to figure that out.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. We are very, very on time, so excited that this is the final question, and I will share a little bit about myself before we go into the final question. So currently, I serve on the Yolo County as a county commissioner for climate action. We are the first county in the nation to have declared a climate emergency that provided the county emergency powers, funding, resources, so that we can address climate action goals and programs and projects and new policies so that we can change behavior. With that, I want to talk about our last question, but I want to break it up in a couple ways. I'm going to read what they have first, which is about policies that have been recently passed by the state and being mindful of underserved communities. So specifically, the governor announced an ambitious goal to ban gas-powered cars by 2035. According to the Kelley Blue Book, the average price of an electric car is estimated at $66,000, which is more in line with a luxury vehicle. If we want to achieve this 2035 climate goal of EVs, how do we ensure that underserved communities are not priced out or left behind?
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because you're right. I mentioned I serve a lot of immigrants, refugees, and those from low-income communities, and I can tell you I don't know any of them that drives an electrical vehicle or a Tesla, right? And so the California Clean Air Mobility Rebate is really meant and disproportionately favors the rich persons, right? Those that are able to afford it, not folks that I serve. And yet we're trying to have this ambitious goal of making sure that everybody drives an electrical vehicle by 2035. In addition to that, they would have to be able to have this charging station in their home, right? And that costs money as well too, because are we going to be able to have charging stations available for folks everywhere to be able to charge. Most people that have money and have electrical vehicles, I know, have the charging station also in their homes as well too. I will take a look at these rebates and make it so that way they cater to the low-income communities. And just because the rebates are, they're not one-size-fits-all. So somebody who makes six figures shouldn't receive the same rebate as somebody who makes $35,000, right? And so we need to retake a look at these rebates. We need to retake a look at these communities of colors. And then if we're going to have this ambition goal of getting them all off and everybody driving an electrical vehicle by 2035, I think we need to make sure that they have what they need to be able to get this vehicle. I also, you know, going back to the grid, I mean, we were getting ready to have some blackouts here, right? So we need to ensure that we have in place something that can hold everything. So yeah, you know, I would definitely look at specializing, carving out special rebates for those from low-income communities. I can also tell you that many of them don't understand what's happening right now. It's not in language, for sure. It's definitely not in language right now.
Thank you very much. So that is the final question, but I actually want to ask one question, if that's okay, about climate, since we're on the topic. This just happened today. The Senate, U.S. Senate, came to an agreement, both Republicans and Democrats, on passing a Senate bill for climate action. And this was very bipartisan. Many people were very surprised because it was about not only achieving climate goals, but supporting business development and America's position globally as an economic powerhouse. With that being said, do you have any ideas of what kind of climate proposals you might propose that would also bring in the Republicans to also support, just like today?
Yeah, I would take a look at what was, you know, approved today, what was voted on today that had bipartisan support. I think we need to do more of those, right? Because it worked, right? Everybody celebrated. Nobody is going after anybody else or each other. And so I think we need to look at similarity to those types of proposed bills and use that as an example to move forward so that we can all come together.
Okay. Thank you very much. That concludes our questions tonight. With that, we will go to our closing statements.
Thank you. Again, I want to thank APAPA, Mary, and Henry, and everybody from the APAPA organization for hosting this, and then the organizations that partnered to put this together. Right now, in the legislature, Asians are represented by only 4%. 4%. But in the state of California, we are 15% and growing. There is no Asian woman Dem right now in the legislature. And the last time we had a woman that represented us was 16 years ago. 16 years ago, right? And so when we all talk about representation, when we all talk about making sure that there's a voice for us there, we don't have that right now. I don't have that. My daughters don't have that. And that's why I'm running. I'm running because I was told I wasn't going to win, right? I was outspent 3-1. I was told I didn't have a chance. A lot of people did not believe in me. Outspent 3-1, came in late, didn't have all the big endorsements, didn't have all the money. Special interests played a role in this, had TV ads, commercials, mailers that were negative and lies. But yet the voters voted, and I still came in first. Still came in the first place. And there were some recent polls that were done. Recent polls as of just last week that concluded and showed that I would still come in first place. I would still come in first place with your support, your endorsement, and your encouragement of others to be able to vote and have somebody that has a voice for us in there at the Capitol. I'm going to end with this. I've got my two kids here. So this is Lana, and this is Hannah. And I know that you
pregnant and didn't have kids, and I now have two beautiful, beautiful girls. And this one here was the one that made me a mother. But this one here is 7 years old, and I know she's being silly, and most of you wouldn't know this, but she's considered special needs. She's nonverbal. She's got the mindset of a 3 or 4 year old, and she may be this way forever. And it's cute now at 7 years old that she does it, but imagine at 20 or 30 years old that she's going to be doing this. She's nonverbal. She has maybe 4 words. And we have to find a way to communicate with her every day. I'm her voice. I'm the voice for the voice that's just like mine. And that is the reason why I'm ready. Not for the title, certainly not for the money, not for all the bashing emails and phone calls and mailers, for these two girls right here. Because it's about time that we put somebody in there that understands what it means to have kids, especially one with special needs, because nobody is advocating for these children right now. And I want to be that voice. I'm sorry I got emotional, but every time I talk about it, if you're a parent, you would understand. You live for your kids, for your children. And one day I may not be around. And I worry who's going to take care of her. Is the system set up for her to be successful? And it's unfair to ask the older one to care for her. And so as parents, you have to find a way to make the life better for your children. And I think most of you that are parents will understand that. Thank you so much.